Gallup Republic Radio. Join us each week for tales and related discussions, internet style.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again.
This week, we discuss the merits of bling in the face of alien infestation.
But first, your hosts. I'm Jay Witten. Steve can just write pretty much anything, and which can be like, oh, that's awesome. And with me are Melissa Mazza.
Perfect Whovian name.
And Kier Hansen.
I'm holding up for cat fight.
Welcome to episode 27 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we wonder how much fun you could have with refrigerator magnets, if the Cybermen let you keep your sense of fun. This week we're taking a look at the Cybermen, continuing our enemies arc. With me tonight are Kier. How you doing, Kier?
Hello, hello, hello.
And Melissa.
Hello, how are you guys tonight?
Doing well.
Very good.
Good.
So, yeah, we're continuing on with our villains, and we decided to start ramping things up, heading towards the bigger baddies, and figured the next ones up on the hierarchy would probably be the Cybermen. So that's going to be our focus for this evening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any way you can go from a silver ski mask to full body armor over the course of 50 years, you're doing pretty well for yourself there, guys.
Heck yeah. Well, we do have some news beforehand.
Okay.
A few things happened to come up this past week. We'll start off with the sad bit that the designer of the Daleks, Ray Kusick, I believe is that how it's pronounced, he died recently. He was 84, and he said, his daughter said that after a short illness, he did pass away. So.
Yeah. Very sad.
Well, that's going to, and I think, you know, we're going to run into some of these instances. It's just a matter of, you know, no pun intended, it's a matter of time. The fact that we've had folks who have been intrinsically involved with the development of the show, you know, 50 years, you got a lot of folks that get into this in their 20s and 30s, and, you know, we're going to come across these things. But it's great to see the outpouring of dedication that these people have had for decades and decades and decades, and the recognition that they receive for that as well. So, you know, a testament to, you know, the Daleks have gone through some minor changes along the way. But, you know, as we've been talking about these villains, and I guess we'll get a chance to play around with this a little more when we talk about the Daleks in greater depth next week. But they haven't gone through that much as far as changes.
They've gotten little dome lights. They've gotten bigger. They've gotten different colors. But, I mean, they're almost identical to the ones we saw, you know, 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And they brought up a really great point about that during the Doctor's Revisited that they did last month in terms of the introduction of them, the fact that they were this idea of a non-humanoid villain, which just, especially for the time, made them that much more terrifying, you know, because they were so far removed from anything that you could identify with or reason with. So, you know, just a brilliant concept from the get-go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, where else can you find a character that, you know, you can look at 50 years later and recognize as, you know, virtually identical? I mean, even Superman, you know, if you look at some of the Superman stuff from when he originated or even from 50 years ago, I mean, it's a completely different character. Yes, he's still got the blue tights and the cape and the S on his chest, but I mean, it's, you know, remarkably different.
Mm-hmm.
So
to say nothing for the villains along the way as well. Yeah. You got your superheroes, but then you take your villains and their motivations or their caliber. The Daleks have been unchanged. They got one intent.
Yeah.
So,
you know, normally it's the hero that remains true to his identity, and the villains kind of change and evolve. And here we've got, you know, 11 iterations of our hero, and the Daleks look exactly the same 50 mm-hmm. years later.
Yeah.
Still pursuing the same things too. And they are so immediately recognizable on a cultural level globally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people recognize them more often. I think, I forget what I was reading where they were saying that the shape or the premise of a Dalek was becoming culturally as identifiable as your, you know, you talk about your Lex Luthors and things of that sort from other major media sources. So that's, that's fantastic to see.
Hey, the Daleks are actually more recognizable than the TARDIS itself.
Really?
Yeah, when you get into to non-Whovians, they recognize, they're like, oh yeah, that's the Dalek thing. From
that's a little pepper shaker thing, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, you show them a TARDIS and it's like, it's a phone booth. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, when you get like a toy or something too, it would be more a Dalek, because a non-Whovian is more likely to recognize it.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that, yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
but yeah, we'll definitely be able to take that apart to a great degree next week.
Yeah, that's just So I mean, it's very sad that he passed away. You know, we're about to talk about the Daleks next week. But.
Yeah, so we'll revisit that too.
Yeah,
but one part of the Daleks that continues on is their current voice, Mr. Nick Briggs, who is absolutely brilliant as the Daleks. And also the Cybermen and the Jadoon, and he's done all kinds of characters, but the Daleks are the ones that he's most recognizable for.
Right.
But now he is also going to be linked to the Ice Warriors.
Yes.
Yeah. And also, I think this is our first confirmation the episode is going to air on April 13th.
Ah, you know, that didn't even click in my head. Okay, cool. So now I've got another thing to add into my iPhone for anticipation dates.
Yeah,
so I mean, that's about the only news that really came out of that was the air date, and then the, you know, the fact that he is going to be providing the voice,
and it's an Edith penned episode.
Mm-hmm. Which I always hold to a pretty high standard.
What, Mark Gatiss? No, I mean, the guy only wrote Sherlock, you know, it's You can't really hold that against him.
Sorry.
So then, talking about upcoming episodes, we've also got a little bit more information about the journey to the center of the TARDIS.
Yeah, this was kind of interested to see the fact that they're really owning up to, as we were hoping, that this was going to be more than just a limited set locations, you know, running down corridors and not really being able to see much of the episode told us, the entirety of some of the TARDIS interior. This will give us a visual that we've been actually provided in some of the book material. Some of the graphic novel material have given us more views into other areas besides the control room. But this will be one of our first really extensive, and I'm hoping it is extensive.
Well, that's what Stephen Moffat has said. Is he, when he was asked about it, he said, "We've built the rest of the TARDIS." So, I mean, that.
The rest.
Yeah.
Just a little.
I don't think we're actually going to see the entirety of what would go into a TARDIS unless it's a quick montage cut of, you know, people running through just all these various different rooms. But, yeah.
I want to see the swimming pool.
Oh, yeah.
He always talks about the swimming pool.
Well, does he really? Let's think about how many times is the swimming pool really?
Just the once. Just the
enough.
Once.
It's
in,
been enough. I want to see it.
The once and river diving into it.
Yeah, he came out wet.
Right.
He came out wet in the 11th hour and said that the swimming pool was now in the library, and that was it. And then, yeah, River fell into it. So, yeah, we've had two references, but clearly that's plenty to get people all worked up in a tizzy.
I need to see the kitchen. I gotta know. Somebody needs to eat at some point in one of these episodes.
Well, that's what Clara was wondering.
Yeah, where can she make her soufflés?
Exactly. Perfect setup.
Yeah.
Well, and then,
so what other news do we have this week?
Well, we've got a little bit of information about John Pertwee as a wartime agent.
Yeah, apparently he was like a 007 type senior intelligence agent, it says, during World War II.
Yeah, I mean, that's very interesting because he's always been portrayed as like the James Bond of the Doctors. You know, he came out when the James Bond movies were getting really big, and so they tried to turn him into, you know, a pseudo action hero. And here we're getting information that, you know, this was all part and parcel. He was just reliving his glory days when he was doing that.
To a certain degree, yeah. And you run into this a lot. I mean, I remember this was kind of a family connection. We have a through a series of marriages, we have a my family has connection to Julia Child, and through one of her husbands, she was widowed a couple of times. One of her husbands, she was involved in British intelligence at a certain point, you know, in terms of like helicopter sorties and things like that. It was just always fascinating stuff to find out about somebody who you would think, oh no, she's a French chef. You'd be surprised how many celebrity or people of cultural recognizability because of the fact that they had a little bit more ability to travel or would not be considered to be necessarily out of place in these alternate locations and things, that they were also used as means to convey military intelligence or things of that sort too.
Isn't that the plot of Argo?
Yeah, well, I guess using that in reverse then as the cover. Yeah, you can do that all the time. But no, I mean, I read this article over and said, God, this is so freaking cool, because this is now art imitating life imitating art, or life imitating art imitating life, whichever. It's one of those doubles.
I'm definitely going to go back and rewatch some of the Third Doctor episodes and see how much of this I can see, like, you know, playing over into it and be like, I wonder if was that acting, or is he, you know, really doing this here?
Yeah,
it says that he used to do this with Winston Churchill too. I think that's an interesting Doctor Who connection. Like, the show is it's been on 50 years. Like, one of the people who played the Doctor, like, where he encounters Winston Churchill all the time. But, you know, the show is old enough that one of the actors actually was a spy for him. Like, I think that's crazy.
And how cool would it be if they later on, because, you know, they keep, you know, lately they've been using Churchill as this kind of recurring character. If they could have him drop a reference to, well, there was that time when you assisted me. You know.
Yeah.
I sent you out on that mission. Oh, yeah, that mission.
That or just go really meta and, you know, have him make reference to the young Pertwee cadet that helped him out at one point.
Yeah. Oh,
I mean, the whole universe would just implode at that point.
Well, if anyone's going to drop a meta reference like that, it's going to be Steemo. Yes.
Yeah.
He's old school as far as his fan base. Speaking of old school, though, I mean, we're talking back, we're going back to some of our villains who have survived the test of time and have been around for quite a while. You know, we mentioned some of the ones in previous weeks who, like our, you know, our Silurians and things that have made, you know, some decent appearances over the course of maybe 25, 30 years of Who, gone through a couple of visual changes and so forth. Now we get to some of the key players. And as you mentioned in the intro, you know, you've got what seems like a pretty simple, okay, robots. Got it. Okay, maniacal robots. How complicated could it really be? Well, apparently, pretty damn creepy. And on the revisit, you know, as they had an interesting backstory from the get-go, you know, if you kind of take it away, if you ignore the costumes, ignore some of the props that they had to use, and really look at the premise that they built our little GoBots out of here. They were pretty interesting then, and when they revisited them and brought them into New Who, they got seriously sinister.
Oh yeah,
I love them. I think they're fascinating. I never thought I'd be interested in something that just seemed so two dimensional, but
well,
I still love seeing them.
That's one thing that Doctor Who is great at doing, is taking these villains and giving them, you know, you have one core tenet. You want to, you know, either take everyone over or kill everyone off, or, you know, just totally monopolize this planet or something, and giving them a lot more depth than that calls for.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you look at the Daleks, I mean, how many stories can you really get out of a little pepper pot that says exterminate? But, you know, they keep coming back and they keep having compelling stories.
Right.
You know, and the same
without using some really kind of, you know, far reaching tropes or things of that sort, they actually do make it interesting each time around rather than just saying, oh, well, there was another cache of them that you didn't get rid of the first time, and now they're back to seek their revenge. And it's not that simplistic. They definitely do put some interesting twists on the recurrence of these villains each time, so that it's not just a matter of, oh, you know, here's a troop that was out on a, you know, on distant sortie, and now they're back and they're pissed too.
Yeah, no. But yeah, the Cybermen, I think it was great in the when they reintroduced him into New Who. I mean, the very first reference we get to him was in the episode Dalek, actually, when the Doctor is looking around through the, you know, the alien museum that this guy has built, and he sees the Cyberman head. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Rose asks him what's that? And he's like, oh, it's an old friend. Well, I say friend, you know. And it was,
yeah.
It was just a simple nod to the fans to say, yep, hey, look, this is what we used to have. Yeah, and then fast forward a year to David Tennant, and we have, you know, the Age of Steel and the Rise of the Cybermen. And he, for people that didn't know the history of the Cybermen, I think this was a great introduction, because he sums it up in one line where he basically says, you know, no matter where you go, no matter what happens, what universe it is, what the you know, the scenarios are going into it, Cybermen will always get created, no matter what. They're an unavoidable part of evolution. Somebody is going to wind up making these things. They're going to come around, and then, you know, here I've got to stop them again.
Right.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that was a great way to bring people up to speed and say, okay, these things just always pop up, accept it, move on.
Yeah.
Exactly. Gets it out of the way.
But it is their origins which that idea of, regardless of what course of events the universe chooses to follow, the fact that these do get created time and time again, or that they are an unavoidable part of the evolution of the universe, or the progression of the universe, goes along with that idea of, there are certain basics when it comes to a species. You know, they want to survive, okay, regardless, whether they're doing so through, you know, hunt and gathering, whether they're doing so by conquering, whether they're doing so by just procreating like mad, you know, whatever it is that is their means of maintaining their continued existence. Somewhere along the way, as these cultures and these civilizations advance and they start getting to the point where they are becoming technologically advanced, somewhere along the way, there's going to be that flip where longevity and survival of the species becomes attributed to the technology. Hence, you know, there's your basic, your most simplistic building blocks of where your Cybermen are going to emerge. Somewhere along the way, if you extrapolate it far enough, someone's going to start saying, well, if I start replacing these organs that are failing with something synthetic, I'll live longer. Oh, but then my muscles start to atrophy. Okay, well, if I have this sort of supportive exoskeleton, I'll survive longer. And it just progresses.
You know, muscles kind of wear out, so why not just go ahead and put in hydraulics instead? Get rid of the whole problem, you know?
Exactly.
So I've only seen the New Who episodes with the Cybermen. How were they created in the old? Because I know we'll get into later the New Who, where they show up with Rose and all that. But do you guys remember how they actually were created, or if it was ever explained at all in their old, you know, classic Who?
Their origins are known. As far as their creation, I'm not as clear. They were, there was a group, one of these robotic development groups, that was actually of Earth origin, alternate universe, that ended up create. It was the Cybus Industries. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, you had the idea of Cybus Industries on this alternate Earth, that was involved with the creation of all these advanced technologies, and they ended up, as a result of some, it was like a vitamin supplement or something of that sort. I'm trying to look it up as I'm going through this. They had this drink called Vitex. So the whole idea of this Vitex company, about the idea about extending the health and longevity of man, went along with the idea of having this network with all of their customers, that they used for, or that they called CybusNet. And part of the service that they would provide to their customers through this communications network was this idea of all of the news, entertainment, and all of these things that would be provided to their customers by way of ear pods. Okay. Remember what you ended up seeing in Martha's ear as they were, you know, working along, and they would have the communication, you know, they would start to be, have the information fed in through the ear pods. The idea was that over time they were able to start to convince, or that they were able to, that the technology became sentient, and that it started getting involved with the conversion of mankind into, you know, longer living, half cybernetic development, to the point where, in order to maintain, the plan was for interstellar travel, but it started out on moon bases, that they started sending these cybernetic humans, or these individuals who were, at this point, far less and less actual humanoid and more, cybernetic, to be used for these dangerous, extra or outer terrestrial, developments. Which is why some of the first episodes we see with the Cybermen back in the 60s had to do with finding caches of them out on these moon bases, where they had been left to start to, let's say, plot for their continued survival, as they felt they were kind of following their directives. But in order to do so, it became what we now recognize as the whole idea of that flesh was considered inferior because it was temporal, whereas technology could be upgraded, could be advanced, could be maintained indefinitely. Therefore, the Cybermen were the superior creation. They never really kind of recognized themselves as a species so much as it was just a superior entity, or superior, an upgraded version. So they would re-engineer humans. And other humanoids. We found that humans were not the only ones that they would go after.
Oh.
Right, no, they actually, I think it was in the first episode that they showed up in the 10th planet, where, you know, they explain, that, you know, they're siphoning energy off of the Earth. You know, their home planet of, what was it, Mondas?
Mondas, yeah.
Is, you know, draining energy from the Earth, and that they actually want to start taking humans back for conversion into further members of their race.
Right.
So, and then, what was it? We see in, wasn't it the, I think it was the moon base episode where, you see that they're actually coming for that reason, like to get the people, not just to maintain the siphoning of energy and stuff, but now they're actually beginning to like harvest.
Right. Because they need, even though the upgrading process does not leave any of the, how do I want to say this? The presence of the original human behind, they still need certain components of each individual human in order to serve as the, not the engine, but at least the, I guess you can call it the brain, but not being used in terms of what we know for capacity for memory and reason and things of that sort, simply for neural function.
Just basically a processor.
Yep, within each model. So it's a one-to-one ratio at that in that regard. You can't have another Cyberman roll off the factory floor without that component.
Right.
Oh.
So, I mean, that's kind of the theme that they consistently take, is that, you know, it's their main threat is that they're there to take people to turn them into Cybermen. I mean, I think there have been a few variations on that, but for the most part, that's their primary function in every story.
And they did introduce, and it was funny, we had a little earlier today, I asked the Twittersphere to kind of speak up on anything that they wanted to contribute to the discussion, other than just saying they're really freaking creepy, and I'm really not terribly pleased about the fact that Neil is going to be bringing them back yet again, so forth. But Nikkei, bless her heart, said, because she's been going back and watching Classic Who at this point, said that at a certain point she she wanted to make sure that she got gold jewelry for one of her birthdays. Because one of the noted weaknesses for the Cybermen was gold, because of the fact that it was a non-corrosive element that would choke their respiratory systems.
Huh.
So she wanted to make sure she got gold pendants, because that would protect her from the Cybermen. Pretty clever as a kid, I would say.
Yeah, that's a good reason right there.
Exactly. I've never been one for gold, but I'll have to give that a second thought.
So, all right, let's take a moment and talk about the evolution of the Cybermen, because all right, we talked about this with Silurians, and we've made mention about the Ice Warriors. The Cybermen have definitely upgraded, you know, pun fully intended. They started out as, you know, ski mask wearing, with, you know, it looks almost like a cardboard box that a kid would make to make themselves look like a robot. You know, you take a cardboard box, you glue some buttons and stuff onto it and color it in, and hey, look, I'm a robot, you know.
Yeah.
And then add a ski mask to it, and all of a sudden you've got the first iteration of the Cybermen.
Exactly. I think one of the reasons why they had, and again, bless them, they didn't really, they could have come up with some sort of cockamamie explanation as to why the Cybermen from the universe that we knew them through, all the way through, the ones that end up coming through the alternate universe, okay, the one that the cyber that Cybus Industries ended up developing, and hence the statement that you mentioned earlier about the fact it doesn't matter what universe you're in, somebody's going to end up creating these things that are going to end up becoming these cyborgs that end up wanting to overtake their makers. But that was one of the easiest ways that they could delineate the fact that there was a difference in their appearance. You know, any slight variation in the course of events from one universe to the next, and you're going to end up with a resulting product, and they really are a product, that has a different look and feel. The fact that we get the ones that came from, you know, as we know them in New Who, are just that much more polished, well, it just gave them an opportunity to say, look, we're not going to do the toaster heads anymore. We're going to come up with something that's slightly a little more effective for a modern audience. But I liked, actually, the premise. As bad as they were in some of the early iterations around the late 60s and early 70s, and as bad as those things looked, they still had the good story, the good premise underneath their creation, or what their motivation was. Their programming was. But the fact that they were internally made from human derivations. So, yeah, they did have a lot of kind of guy in a spacesuit sort of appearance to them, because, well, why wouldn't they? At least that leaves it very clear to the viewer that these were built on a human frame, literally. So yeah. I was okay with that.
Well, I mean, you look at it. I mean, the human body is functional. It obviously can be upgraded, but, you know, it functions. So why not start with something that's already proven functional and just build on that? So, you know, it makes sense from the Cybermen's point of view as well.
Mm-hmm. And they even went to the point where they would at least have distinctions between, you know, you want to call them ranks? I guess they were ranks, because they had sort of military titles, didn't they? They had controllers and leaders
and
lieutenants. But they made that kind of clear, too, as far as, you know, being able to tell them apart. The worst ones, the absolute worst ones to look at, were the ones, obviously, from 66, when you were looking at the ones from Mundus, because they were, you know, just goofy helmet, ski mask, and you're wearing a circuit board on your chest with a bunch of tubes. But that was as advanced. You take 66. If you were trying to say, you know, what a, and this isn't just a robot. You could do, you know, Robbie the robot all day long and have something that doesn't really have much human element to it other than the fact that it has independently moving limbs. But yeah. You want something that says that, all right, this came from human origin. Well, now you're in kind of some new territory. It's not just a human-like. It's actually human that has been repurposed. So, all right, let's give you that appearance.
And they didn't go with the easy, lazy route of, you know, oh, no, they're just so advanced that they've figured out how to mimic human flesh. You know, it's, no, they actually wanted to make them look like a robot. So it would have been very easy to say, oh, no, they've just got this synthetic coating that resembles flesh, you know.
Right.
And thankfully, they didn't go that route.
Mm-hmm. I think I remember coming across some of the notes that was saying that there were partial conversions done that still held human features. So you had, what was it now? Was it I think it was from the Invasion episode, where you had, Tobias Vaughn,
right?
Tobias Vaughn having the, some sort of an alliance formed, with the Cybermen and was able to transfer, I think at his point of death, transferred his soul or his spirit or his consciousness into robotic forms, 14 copies of them. And as a result, he had the ability to take his cognizant human sentience. He did not go through the same sort of not brainwashing, but emotion limiting that the Cybermen typically do, where they try to shut off emotions to make them more effective. So he was able to influence further development of the cybernetic race because of the fact that he associated with them and partnered with them and literally allied with them in his attempt to prolong his own existence. So, comes across the seventh Doctor in his continued attempt to live forever because he wanted to figure out time travel for his own purposes. So, anyway, again, you can follow any one of these threads to the nth degree if you want to, but that overlapping between the idea of humans wanting to live beyond their natural means, some people will look at that and say, well, wouldn't it be nice? Other people decide they're actually going to go and actively pursue it to whatever end. And we keep ending up with the Cybermen along the way.
Did you guys want to go maybe episode by episode about the Cybermen? Or, I mean, we've already hit upon a bunch of them.
Yeah. Well, let's get us past the what we see in the earliest appearances of the Cybermen back in our episodes from 66, 67 or so are actually a little bit jacked up because that's pushing us as far as episode time beyond present day. So now we're into, you know, near 22nd century at this point. As far as some of the interactions the Doctor has with the Cybermen when they're met then. If we want to take it to something that's more kind of immediately attributable to how we get to what we know them in the current series episodes, you'd probably want to jump, I'd probably say to about the Invasion, 68. Because then, as I just mentioned with Tobias Vaughn and those things, that at least gets us to the point where we've got not only the Doctor squaring off against it, but now we've got the establishment of UNIT getting involved. So that's kind of, it's a good connection that allows us to see beyond just the recurring nemesis And now we've got something where it's recognized by Earth forces, human forces, as a threat to the planet as well. And that's a thread that continues on through, you know, Rose and Mickey and on and on and on to even to what we've got now. So that might be a decent point to drop the needle. Now, have you, Jay, did you get a chance to actually go back and watch some of these episodes?
Not recently. I was trying to this week, but I've seen a couple of the earlier ones, I'd say within a few months recently.
Okay.
So I'm familiar with a couple of them. But mostly I'm just going to be going off notes.
No, that's understandable. Well, as I mentioned, you know, from the invasion where you've got Vaughn, Tobias Vaughn, is working with the Second Doctor, wants to help against this recurrent threat. But because of the fact that it's a great Brig episode, by the way, too, just because, you know, I'm always going to make sure that I've got the banner for the Brigadier over my shoulder. because Vaughn gets shot on the rooftop towards the end of the episode, his only means of survival, as I mentioned, is to end up kind of pursuing that same sort of a cybernetic longevity.
Right.
We don't end up seeing the Cybermen again for 7 or 8 years.
Right. It wasn't until Revenge of the Cybermen, which was, I believe, mid-70s.
Yep. Wasn't exactly a really deep episode as far as their villainous plots. This was just another opportunity where, in order to give us our baddie, we get taken off into a remote space location where we happen to run into a cache of the Cybermen, where some of these where they've been pursuing their recruitment or their harvesting. But the problem is that they, as we find them through these human scientists that have started working with them, not really realizing what their full intent is, we do at least get the acknowledgement of the fact that one of the things they find in this asteroid that they're mining is they find a cache of gold. They find that the gold is actually dangerous to the respiratory systems for the Cybermen, which ends up becoming part of their downfall as we get towards the end of the
episode. Yeah, now I'm starting to remember this a little bit now, yeah.
the great thing about this particular episode, as far as I remember, is that this Jupiterian asteroid or this planet that they're concerned about is called Voga.
Right, you had the Vogons.
Yes, the Vogons. Or Vogons. And if you didn't pronounce it just right, I loved going back and watching this thing because I kept expecting them to crack out, you know, a missile of bad poetry to use against them or something. But I never got that gag. Which was too bad because I'm trying to remember, around 75, when did Douglas Adams write The Hitchhikers, the first book? I don't even remember. I'm going to cross-reference that one.
On this.
That might have been early 80s, so this might have... I know, I'm jumping universes here, but it doesn't matter because technically Douglas Adams does run rampant through Doctor Who, so this is,
this
is all right.
It was published in 79, so from here on out, I'm saying that the Vogons from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy were Doctor Who inspired.
They were born, yes, they were born from the planet infected with Cybermen.
Yeah.
But then we get another jump. Again, we start running into the issue of the Cybermen being tracked down on a this time we're back into future, we're jumping well ahead into the 26th century. The Cybermen have appeared to take out a team of scientists, or that have been involved in the demise of a group of scientists that they were in the process of working their way back towards the Earth for another conquest attempt, on a space freighter, that had to be taken out. Interesting point, and you'll notice as the notes I dropped in here about this particular episode, take a look at the last paragraph here where it says that the Cybermen had a backup plan to take the freighter, and when their plans were foiled, they were gonna kamikaze the thing right into the Earth. Okay? Their plan was foiled as the freighter travels back in time 65 million years,
causing the destruction of the dinosaurs.
How
awesome is that? So
I love when they do that. When I mean, you know, with the City of Death, where you know you've got this cataclysmic event that forms humanity, and we actually get to see it play out. And you know, when for some reason when they tie it in like that, I love that. I know it's cheesy at times and gimmicky, but for some reason those things just I adore it. Yeah, I mean, a good example of that recently was the episode with the doctor, in Pompeii. You know, when he set off Vesuvius, you know, it's just tying the doctor into an event like that. It just, it makes me giggle.
Yep, absolutely. Or the inspiration for some of Van Gogh's paintings and things of that sort. And just being there at the right time to cause these singular events.
Yeah,
we get a couple of other occurrences of the Cybermen along the way. You know, they appear in the Five Doctors along with a ton of other, you know, villains that are there. So that's just kind of a cameo appearance as far as they are. Then we do get the aptly named Attack of the Cybermen. Okay, in Attack of the Cybermen, they are about as close as they possibly have gotten to effectively carrying out their plans. They actually do take capture of the Doctor. They have secured the ability to travel time at this point, and they are going to go back and actually jump all the way back to what our points of origin, and knowing the planet Mundus, so that was their point of origin. And they were, now that they've got the forces, they've got the one individual who has been effectively stopping them, you know, for countless centuries, both past and future centuries. And now they've got the ability to go back in time travel to save their planet in the first place so that all this becomes irrelevant. They end up, Doctor ends up squaring off against one of their highest ranks. And again, we start to realize the fact that,
they have a hierarchy. Yeah.
Yeah. They have a hierarchy, but they also have a hive mind. So that it's kind of one of those ideas that if you cut off the head, the rest of the body fails. So that's, which is something that we play along with a bit in subsequent iterations.
Yeah. In the later episode. Yes.
Think through here. We've got one more appearance
in the classic here, yeah.
Yep. So this is just going to be we needed a bunch of baddies for this one. We wanted a big messed up episode where so you've got magic, you've got killer robots, and why not?
Just to round it out,
we'll throw the Nazis into it too. It was a mess of an episode. It really, really. If you want to pretend that certain episodes didn't exist, this could be one that you could write off and say, you know what? Along with a lot of the late 80s at that point, you could write it off and say,
this is
broadcast.
This is a good example of why the show kind of fell apart. It was, you know, nobody really cared. They were just throwing stuff together. It was, you know, things like this, you know, prove why we got the hiatus.
Mm-hmm. But, I have not seen these episodes. Like, what specifically was so bad about it?
This was one where they were attempting to do way too much within a single episode. And it wasn't just one of our, you know, our Russell episodes where it's really great for about 75% of it, and then they're just putting it all up at the end. This was bad from the get-go. Because they wanted to use something, they wanted to use a deep element of Whovian lore. They wanted to use the whole idea of Rassilon and the core construct of the Gallifreyan government and the Time Lord infrastructure. And so they had this idea that there were these three groups that are all trying to capture this, I wouldn't really call it a weapon, but the statue that was created by Rassilon, that is considered to be the pinnacle of defense mechanisms for Gallifrey itself. if any of these groups are able to compromise that statue, then they can hence, overthrow the Time Lords, conquer Gallifrey and have their way. For some reason, they decided that the three groups that were going to be attempting to do this, the Cybermen, okay, I get it. A 17th century sorceress. I don't know. I've seen this episode once and I wanted to forget it. I still don't know why they incorporated her. And
with the Seventh Doctor, they were trying to expand. I mean, they had hit a lot of the cliches and the niches and things like that. And so there were a lot more than usual with the supernatural and the mystical and things like that. And it's just, yes, trying to branch out is a good thing, but it gets to a point where you're like, okay, you're just trying to tack stuff on here and it's not sticking.
Right. The premise was that this defense, that this weapon, of sorts, in order to make it function, you had to have the statue and then it had to be armed with Rassilon's bow and arrow as well. One of the means to be able to keep this from ever becoming actually functional was not only to keep the object separate, but the Doctor went one step farther and actually made sure that the statue was going to be sent into space, for hundreds of years so that it could never be, reconnected with the other components that would make the weapon function. Well, because it made it easier to shoot on location, they wrote into the script that the statue was going to fall back to Earth right in 1988 when the episode was being aired so that they could use present day backdrop for it. Idea being that if the Cybermen, because the Cybermen obviously appearing over multiple occurrences over the course of centuries and centuries, that they would be around obviously when the statue returned to Earth's atmosphere and could be captured, the Doctor decided that he was going to try to convince them that they had gained control. But in the process, the Doctor was able to utilize the statue to actually to manipulate, again, going after the head of the cyber fleet, taking over one of the leaders and forcing the fleet to fail. So again, you've got Gallifreyan history, you've got planet conquering weapons, you've got three different villains, you've got a span of 250 years from when the statue was first ejected into space for Earth's protection. And your villains happen to be magicians and Nazis. It's just a mess. This is really just a mess. So
that sounds a mess.
Skip it.
So, then we, obviously get a long break from the show itself, but finally in 2006, we see the return of the Cybermen in their new form.
Well, we get the alternate universe.
Well, Cybermen. Yes, yeah.
Because the whole idea was that in the Doctor's natural universe, or the one that we had been seeing up until this point, the Cybermen had been defeated.
Right.
And were no longer a threat of any sort to our universe as we know it. So
which was a great way of erasing the previous iterations and saying, okay, we've got this new looking Cyberman and this is all you're going to see because it's from this other dimension. And that's all they have.
Yeah. And the reason why they're a little more polished this time around is because they were developed from start to finish by this robotics and cyborg development organization, specifically being the next evolution of humanity from their inception. That was their intent from the time they were originally developed. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. And I mean, this was a good way to introduce the new audience to the Cybermen, but, nothing really of consequence. I mean, it was just, your typical kind of story, basically.
Yep. I do like the fact, though, that it cut out a lot of the very murky backstory that they had attempted to do with the Cybermen of the original iteration. The whole idea of the fact that they were slowly created as a result of, you know, these developments over the course of hundreds and hundreds of years of mankind, you know, slowly improving its own, you know, or extending its own life to the point where it ends up with a creation that is more machine than man, but it still has a certain degree of sentience. And we all know, once you've got the God in the machine, you no longer have control over it.
Right.
So, you know, creation taking over its creator. This sidestepped all of that and said, yep, we had a madman at the controls, created a bunch of robots that in order to, that he had intended to be the next step for mankind. They require a brain to function. They went berserk. They're harvesting brains. Go.
Yeah.
And I mean, it made it simple.
And this did for the Cybermen what the new Star Trek movie did. You know, it was just, okay, we've got all these years of stories and all this stuff built up to, we're just going to wipe that away and start from square one. Okay, here's the basics. Go from here.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They weren't dismissing or trying to recap or pretend that what was written before, what was broadcast before, didn't exist. That was fine. Go ahead and maintain it. If you're a fan of it, great. This is an alternate take. And they just kind of ran with it from there. So, yeah, I didn't have any problem with that. In fact, I really, and I'm probably not alone in this, find that they've, as a result of this kind of a, don't give them a whole lot of time to take this apart, just accept the fact that these are these sinister creations out to harvest your brains, and they'll cut the rest of your body away to do it, are genuinely freaking creepy. And the whole idea of the dragging you behind the plastic curtains and the sparks flying and the saw blades whizzing, and they really took it dark from the get go.
Yeah, and I mean they became a horror villain, for all intents and purposes. Yep. You don't know it's the same thing as, you know, like Leatherface, you know, where it's all the gore happens off screen, which makes it that much more vivid and terrifying, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Leaving it to the imagination. The imagination is a hell of a lot scarier than anything that you can put on camera.
Oh, yeah. Well, that leads us into the Army of Ghosts and Doomsday.
Yep.
And we see, for all intents and purposes, an all-out war brew between the Cybermen and the Daleks.
Little comedic at times.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, anytime you get two robots trash-talking each other, and I mean, it takes, what, like 5-6 minutes for them to get it all out. It was brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. And the funny thing is you had the same guy doing the voices yeah. for both of them. So he had to sit there and do arguments with himself in the studio. Fantastic.
Yeah. So then,
But let me just back the whole idea of the Army of Ghosts thing, all right, and the whole idea of them slowly coming through, the rift technically, but them scouting at these intervals, and the whole idea of mankind's slow acceptance, where if you hand it to humanity in small doses, they'll be able to accept or write off just about anything.
Yeah.
What was your take on that as far as how plausible that really was? Or were they just sort of going a little goofy with it just to get themselves further through the episode?
No, I think that it's brilliant. I mean, one thing you've seen is that, you know, given enough time with anything, humanity will accept it as a natural part of life. I mean, they showed that brilliantly in The Power of Three recently.
Yeah, I was thinking about the cubes. Yeah.
You know, if you have enough time around something and it doesn't harm you, you're just going to accept it, and it's going to become a normal part of your everyday life. Hmm. You know, whereas if you get something that looks sinister or has some kind of negative connotation to it, it's going to be difficult. But you know, here all these things are just, they're popping up, you see them everywhere, you've never heard a bad thing about them, and they just continually come on a regular schedule. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, you're gonna get used to it, and you're just gonna accept it. I mean, that's just how it works.
I thought it really rang true how Jackie Tyler assumed that it was her father. Like, there was no evidence. Like, it was like the Cyberman was pretending to be her. You know, it was just, that's just human nature, that she wanted that to be one of her loved ones. So I think that's why people were so accepting of this.
And that's really interesting. I wonder, they didn't take the time to really kind of explore it, but the fact that our tendency to want to try to reason these things away, and their natural response was to say, oh, well, these must be spirits. So if they're spirits and they're not really harming us, they must be family members. And they just immediately jumped to those kinds of conclusions.
Right.
As opposed to saying, oh, it's an alien race scouting us.
Yeah. The next time that we see them creep up is actually in the next Doctor. And I will be honest, I've watched this episode a grand total of once.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I watched it, my initial introduction into Doctor Who. I got to this one, I was like, okay, Christmas special, going through, Cybermen, giant robot, all right, and I'm done, moving on, and I've never looked back.
Okay. It's actually, it's not that bad, because I didn't like the episode at first, but I rewatched it this Christmas, just, you know, watching Christmas episodes, and it was actually a lot better on the second viewing. That guy is on The Walking Dead.
Yep. He's the governor. Yep. Which is too bad, because now people had actually said at one point when they were discussing, you know, the next actors to play the doctors, they had him on a list because he did, you know, did a fair job, you know, as far as being able to be slightly humble, slightly humorous, and so forth. Now, since he's played the governor in The Walking Dead, he has stigmatized himself.
And nobody will ever accept him. Yeah.
He is going to be an hole for the rest of time, because that character is bad news, which is unfortunate. I think he would have made an excellent Full Tilt Doctor, but no, I think it's an endearing episode as far as the Cybermen's involvement with it. I did like the whole, it was a little campy, the idea of having a 50-foot robot clunking its way through old England, but it was, I don't know, I think it was exactly what the Christmas episode needed to be. It was large scale. It didn't have any impact on the timeline or the progression of the arc. But it was definitely entertaining in and of itself. I would give it another shot, Jay. I would. I think Melissa's right on that.
And I've been meaning to. Honestly, I think what it breaks down to is the fact that I knew too much going into it. I knew that I only had a couple episodes left before David Tennant was out, and I was dreading every second of it. And here somebody comes in saying that he's the new doctor, and my emotions automatically went, nope, I hate you, I don't like you, go away, you know. Yeah. And so I think that's a lot of where my dislike for this episode came from.
Okay.
So I do want to go back and check it out again, just for that reason, because I didn't get a lot out of it. I know that I could have, but because I just emotionally locked down, I didn't get as much out of it as I could have.
Right. No, understood. Well, then we get some, we get to start to see some of the large scale, of the Cybermen's, military strength, as far as their involvement, going through the Pandorica. We see them along with the myriad of everybody, you know, every baddie in the Hooniverse, being gathered. And then great standoff at Stonehenge and that wonderful speech that we all love so well.
Oh, yes.
But your interesting point is that, if you need somebody to stand guard there and wait, and you don't know how long it's going to require before your target arrives, stick a Cyberman there.
Yeah. Preferably in pieces.
Exactly. They're about as patient as a centurion.
Well, I mean, that does make them kind of creepy, and I think it was really creepy when the head keeps coming back to life and all that stuff.
Yeah, that was the cool thing, was seeing, okay, this Cyberman is tore up, you know, completely separated, and, you know, I mean, he went full C-3PO, you know, and
nice pull, okay.
And still, you know, was able to provide a tangible threat at the right time.
Yeah, for like a little cameo, that was a cool thing to do.
Just following programming.
Yeah.
That's all.
I mean, it did kind of get cheapened the next time that we saw them in A Good Man Goes to War. You know, where you've got the 12th Cyber Legion, and their whole purpose in the episode was just to get the load up. just to make Rory that much more awesome.
And it did.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because as I said, that was probably my turnaround moment for Rory.
Take note in this episode, one way to make yourself instantly cool, don't look at the explosion. You never look at the explosion, it automatically makes you cool.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like Hawkeye, you know, shooting the bow over his shoulder and he's doing the no-look shot.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on. That's cool. Sorry, we're jumping references all over the place. Just walk with us. Okay.
So, and then we wrap it up in our last appearance of the Cybermen so far.
So far. With the icky little Cybermats. Ugh.
Dude, they're silverfish. They're metal silverfish with big, gnashy teeth. It's, no thank you.
They remind me to a certain degree, because all I expect to keep seeing from them is them burrowing. Like full weevils, you know?
Now, one thing I will say that I did like, I mean, when it goes to bite, you see it's, I mean, it's biological mouth, you know, it's clearly not a mechanical thing entirely. And I did kind of like that because, you know, if you go back to the original Cybermats, I mean, they were mostly biological, if I remember them correctly. I mean, they had like little, little amoeba feelers or something on the bottom, you know, and they were mostly biological. So seeing them like, okay, so they kept pretty much the same creature and just slapped some armor on top of it. I did kind of like that.
They're the battle version of them. But yeah,
armor rooms, yeah.
The fact that you can go out and you can actually buy little remote control Cybermats now.
Can?
Oh, yep.
Yeah.
So I think they've actually been in early, like, Cybermats were like a classic Who thing, right? It looks like from the notes, I've seen it in a couple of the episodes that we mentioned.
Yeah. Used at times as scouts and other times as defensive mechanisms. And I think at one point, I can't even remember what the reference was where they were used as it wasn't even as a defensive maneuver. I'll have to go back and check. I'll throw it into the notes when we publish the episode. But there was actually instances where they were used in a couple different capacities, used as weapons, used as scouts, used as probes, used as spies, and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and then, yeah, I mean, I hated this episode for the simple reason of, you know, so you've got, you know, the Doctor zapping him with the crystal he pulled out of the TARDIS in Rise of the Cybermen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you've got the Pandorica opens where they're just kind of sideliners.
Sure.
A Good Man Goes to War where you see their entire fleet get blown up. You know, and it just seems like they're constantly getting more and more neutered until you finally get to closing time where, you know, they get defeated with love.
Yeah, that whole takedown.
I mean, it's just like, you know, the whole problem that we had with the Daleks is that, you know, they keep showing up and they keep getting beaten. And you stop taking them seriously, you know, because you know, okay, here they are again, and they get taken out again. You know, mm-hmm. You almost have to go comedic with them for them to make any sense. And then you take the Cybermen and you throw them in this episode, and they're meant to be scary. And they're meant to be a threat, and Craig defeats them with love. It was like, really? That's how you're gonna?
It also doesn't really jibe with the way that they've operated up until now for 50 years. Like, if they could be defeated with love, like so many other people who, like, you don't think Jackie Tyler would have,
things
like that.
You know, the Doctor kind of tries to explain it. He's like, well, it's not really love. It's the fact that, you know, he's getting talked over and everything. So, like, clearly they're trying to put some sense into it, but, it, you know, it's just,
whole idea of an emotional overload against a core construct that is attempting to maintain control of its biological core by eliminating the emotions. So the idea of countering that with something that cannot be contained. I understand the premise. I just think that it was executed in a very campy sense.
Oh yeah.
Or maybe not campy, but a cliched sense. But the whole episode itself was really kind of more of just a fun romp episode. The fact that they decided to use Cybermen and it might not have been the right call. I would have maybe introduced a...
Well, I mean, there's plenty of villains that you could have brought back for it. I mean, throw them up against a couple, you know, a little squad of Jadoons. You know, do something like that. It's, you know, there's all kinds of ways that you could have done this and not ruined the Cybermen and taken a writer like Neil Gaiman to give them any sort of credence again.
Right. Well, that's where we stand now. So we're now at the point where they have been relegated to being either just brute force, sheer numbers, easily conquerable if you take out the head, or if you fill the head with unicorns and moonbeams, then
kitty whiskers and
exactly, yeah, then they explode. So you've cheapened a villain that had a lot of promise on its return.
They were great at the beginning, and you've gone and castrated them.
Right. So we're kind of hoping at this point that we're going to gain some of that back. I have no idea. In fact, they're doing such an outstanding job of keeping shtum about what Neil's going to be doing with them. The fact that the episode is titled The Last Cyberman, for what it's worth, there's no such thing as a last anything.
Yeah.
In the universe.
The little bits of production pictures that we've seen, you know, have displayed multiple Cybermen. So clearly it's, you know, it's not that there's one. It's not that this could be the last one. It's just, you know, clearly there's an aspect of the story that we're not privy to yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if anyone can get my faith that they can bring back the Cybermen and make them a relevant villain again, Neil Gaiman can do it.
Right. Has he said in any of his interviews why it was that, or whether he was handed this skeletal plot that said we need you to incorporate the Cybermen, or whether he chose to because of his particular affection for them?
I don't know. I haven't read anything about it yet. You know, I know that, you know, that has happened a number of times. I mean, like with Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, you know, Steamo basically went Chris Chibnall and he goes, Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, write it. You know, and that's all he was given.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I was going back through Neil's tweets trying to see if I could find something around the time that he was finishing penning it, but I couldn't see anything from when he started writing it that was giving any sort of indication as to whether it was a handed over project or whether they said, you know, we had such a great time in the last go around, you've got free rein, write whatever you want.
Well, and I think that's more likely. I mean, if you're going to bring on a writer like Neil Gaiman, you're going to say, hey, you know what? You're good at this. Do what you do. You know, if you want to reintroduce a character and, you know, it's just, you're going to hand it to a stock writer, somebody who's been there, who's, you know, proven themselves and who's going to have multiple episodes. You're not going to dump it on your guest star. You know,
yeah.
So I'm thinking that, you know, it may have come up in a planning meeting and said, hey, you know what would be cool? But I think that this was Gaiman's choice in the long run. You know, it basically wound up coming down to, you know, yeah, I would like to write these guys. And
Well, there's a lot of reasons why I think this episode is going to be really solid, even aside from the little bits that we know right now. I mean, as far as the casting for the episode is going to be great, because we've got, I remember when there's a lot of tweets going around from Warwick Davis, we all know him as Willow,
yeah.
that he was going to be involved with it as well, and he was so excited about it. He's another one of those Brit actors that wanted to know, just, I don't care what you have to do, create me a character, make me a corpse in the street, I don't care what it is, just get me into a Who episode.
Yes.
So, and they handed this over to him. So,
I'm going to let you go on. I'm sorry. I found information. I have an interview with Neil Gaiman.
Oh, cool. Okay. But of course we've also got Jason Watkins to return as well, who is just phenomenal. I absolutely love everything that he gets involved with. I mean, I'm familiar with him, from Being Human, and a couple of other series along the way. I think, I don't know if you ever watched the Dirk Gently series that didn't really take off very well. They did three episodes of they attempted to take, Douglas Adams's Dirk Gently books and create a series out of it.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, it didn't quite work. We'll have him involved as well. In what capacity, I'm not entirely sure. They've got him written in as a character called Haha. I don't know what that means. But what did you find, Liz, about the,
This is, apparently Neil Gaiman was chatting to a French website, an unnamed French website. It says, Stephen wrote to me and asked if I wanted to make the Cybermen scary again. So right there, you know, he was asked to do it.
Okay.
I thought back to myself at the age of 6 or 7, the moon base, Tomb of the Cybermen. I saw them when they were first broadcast. The Cybermen were much scarier than the Daleks because they didn't make any noise. The Daleks moved all over the place shouting, exterminate, etc. With the Cybermen, it's different. You turn around and bam, there they are. It's scary. I told him that I was going to take the Cybermen from the 60s and see what I could do. I don't know if it's going to work. We'll see. So I don't know. Maybe okay. He says, well, I'm going to take the Cybermen from the 60s. That could mean he's right. Going to, you know, update it from that, or is he really going to go back to those, like, scheme
masks? He's going back to the Mondas.
Well, yeah. The pictures that we've seen have shown the new-looking Cybermen.
Right.
So, and I don't think they're going to go back to such a hokey look. They might change it a little bit, might tweak it, but I don't see them straying far from what we've got now as far as the visual look. I do like the fact that we're no longer going to get the horrible stomping boot sound.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 'cause, I mean, that did take away from it. That was implying, you know, the only reason why these guys are scary is because of their numbers.
Right, yeah. and their singular focus,
right,
on capturing and converting, mm-hmm. Deleting sentience and using the shell.
Yeah.
What I was kind of taken away from that blurb though is that maybe the whole idea is that they are using the premise of the Cybermen from our universe as they were defeated, but they've had an opportunity to restore that pursuit, using the iterations or the versions of them that have come across from the alternate universe.
Okay.
Some sort of connection between the two. The motivation of the predecessors using the mechanism of the successors, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I like that idea.
I just don't know how the two connect. I'll leave it to the writer to tell me how those two cross paths.
Right.
Whether it's a download, you know, some sort of an idea of the original programming format for the Cybermen that had been defeated at that point from that we last saw in the 80s. That ends up getting installed into one of the shells from the modernized Cybermen, which could be the last Cyberman.
There you go.
As we knew them, the last Cyberman is now the first of this
the
reboot.
New race. Yeah,
that
would be awesome. I mean, all I know is that this episode is going to be good, but. Yeah. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, as far as it's falling, tell me that's falling into what we're we're counting that as episode 13. So that means that's how many episodes in are we going to be at that point?
Eight. No, it 13 is the season finale.
That's our.
I think Cybermen is 11. So it's going to be the 6th episode in, I think.
Really? Okay, well, no. Episode 11 is, well, according to IMDb, they're crediting 11 as Journey to the Center of the TARDIS.
Okay, then Tomb of the Cybermen is going to be 12. So that'll be 7 in.
Okay.
I remember that Gaiman's script comes right after Journey to the Center of the TARDIS, so assuming IMDb is correct, because, you know what, they're never wrong.
But, no, yeah. Of course not. Well, because they've got everybody involved. Yeah, they claim it as a, obviously, you know, as we know, next one we're going to receive Phantom of the Hex on the 30th of next month. Then episode, well, that, and that's considered technically episode 7. Episode 8 is the Cold War, which I'm assuming is our submarine episode.
Right, the Ice Warriors, yes.
Then we've got the as of yet untitled episode 9, as far as IMDb is concerned. We have our working titles.
Right.
Working titles. Then the Crimson Horror for episode 10. Then Journey to the Center of the TARDIS for 11. An unnamed or untitled episode 12. And then 13 will be the last Cyberman. 14 untitled, and then the and that's as far as we take it. So,
right. So 14 is probably going to be the 50th anniversary special. So,
all right.
Well, thankfully we don't have much longer to wait now. We're in the home stretch here.
Yeah, it's coming up.
Yeah. Now, talking about stuff that we've got before the 30th comes around, before we've got the opportunity to have some new content to freak out about, we've got a little more discussion to do on the villainy arc. I think we might have overlooked some pittance of a character somewhere along the way that we might want to discuss.
Who?
I don't know. I was making dinner and I was reaching for the salt and pepper shakers, and it just occurred to me, oh yeah, those crappy little pepper pots. I guess we should probably discuss them too. So you guys hit
minor details.
You guys hit to talking about slugs in a can next week.
Yeah, maybe? I guess.
We can't find anything better to talk about, I suppose.
Yeah. All right, so yeah, next week we will be talking about the Daleks.
Yes.
You can't have a series of Doctor Who without them popping up at least once, so they're going to pop into this arc.
Yep. And then we had been kind of theorizing about what we were going to do, because that still leaves us a little bit of a gap before we start gearing up towards what we want to mention for the 30th. We'll be able to get another cast in between there. I want to... When we're talking villains here, I mean, we've been talking about races and species and those things, but we have a particular character that I think warrants a discussion because of the fact that it gets so complicated when you really carry it through, almost as complicated as the Doctor's identity itself, and that being the Master. So right. I definitely want to make sure that we take an opportunity to do that too. I'll be doing a little bit of traveling for the big GWC meetup, but I don't think that's going to interrupt our programming schedule or our recording schedule. So we'll be cool with that too. But yeah, I'm getting excited about next week. I get to do a lot of good rewatching this week to pick up on the Daleks. So, you know, set your GPS to Skaro and let's go.
All right. Yeah, well, it is definitely time for us to wrap up. So you guys have anything to say in closing?
Well, let's just make sure that people know, because we're starting to get some good feedback from folks when we solicit it, when we start asking out there either on Facebook or on Twitter or just in conversations on with other geek-minded folks. Since, you now know if you're listening to this and Jay cranks these episodes up pretty quickly, so you've got some time to gather your thoughts about the Daleks to share them with us next week, hit us on Twitter, @GallifreyRadio. We're on Facebook as well for Gallifrey Public Radio. Just search that in your little Facebook searchy box there. Obviously on iTunes, drop the comments in there on the episodes themselves. We'll incorporate them all. or hit us on the web as well at the Podbean address where you got this very episode you're listening to right now, and talk to us there too. Jay and I are in the process of putting together the GallifreyPublicRadio.com proper, and that
I just want to talk about that real quick. We do have our permanent home now is going to be GallifreyPublicRadio.com. We're in the process of moving everything over there. The podcast will start going up on there, but they will also continue on at the Podbean address. So if you guys, you know, download it directly from there, you'll have some time to make the adjustments you need. So they will go up in both places. If you get it from iTunes, don't worry. It should work seamlessly in the transition. It'll just come from a different source, but you shouldn't even see anything on the other side. It's just taking out a little bit of the address to get to the source.
Yep.
Okay. Keep
throwing the suggestions out, whether it's comments or things that you want to add to the discussion for the Dalek for next week, or if it's ideas for additional things that you think we should give some credence to in the weeks ahead. So speak up. Help us make this your cast as well.
Yeah, and feel free to solicit, I know I can say this for my, solicit me personally. My Twitter handle is @modelmelissa with an underscore in between. People, you know, we shouldn't have to necessarily just solicit listener feedback. You guys can just throw it at us and we can work with what we got. Cause we have one slot to film. Can be listener suggestions, but also we had some good emails last week, about the Veil Yard and stuff. I just want to know what people are talking about right now. We can definitely incorporate it into the show.
Absolutely. It could be, theories and suspicions about the tail end of this coming series. It could be your take on General Louise Carter. It could be anything. Coleman, sorry. Why did I want to say Louise Carter? Where did that come from? Another celebrity, I guess. Or it could be the Brigadier. Or if you have built a functioning canine so that I can come to your house and hug it. So,
and then steal it.
Yeah, and then leave with a very large thing under my shirt.
All right. Well, this has been episode 27 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying you have identified yourself as GPR listeners.
And this is Melissa saying I will defeat the Cybermen by the power of love.
Love and gold. And this is Kier saying man will be reborn as Cyberman, but you will perish under maximum deletion. Which always cracked me up, because isn't deletion kind of final?
Maximum deletion.
They were going to ludicrous speed.
All right, we'll see you guys next week.
Nice.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week on iTunes or at gallifreypublicradio.podbean.com. Have something you want to say or just want to say hello? Send us an email at gallifreypublicradio@gmail.com or leave us a comment on iTunes. You can also find us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio. You can also find our hosts @_Melissa or @Skullpound. Music by Dan Doodly Doo and Retcon Addict.
Welcome to episode... Wait, this is 27, isn't it? Damn it.
You're never going to get that right. Your notes are always going to be fakakta.